Good evening. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm right here with the one and only...
Mark Levine.
There you go, Mark. Mark is struggling with his microphone over there.
Hey, I just got the microphone. Don't blame me.
Last minute, he's got a microphone, so Mark is ready. Actually, I hid it in another room.
I believe it.
You know, Mark was able to find it, so unfortunately, it's going to be the two of us. At any rate, we got plenty to talk about. You listen to WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your Pacifica affiliate. The show is News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. and also available if you go on the WPFW website. If you have friends out of state or anywhere who are out of range of the signal and want to listen, they can go to WPFW.org and listen live. Additionally, on the website, if you go to the vault, you can find the show, and you can look through the shows. All of my shows are there. You can download them for a podcast. You can listen to them right there. So there's plenty of ways to enjoy News Views.
And all of my shows are on MarkLevineTalk.com. In fact, I'm on TV tonight. I turn on News Channel 8 at 8 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I'm debating on the Capital Insider. But everything I do is right there at MarkLevineTalk.com.
MarkLevineTalk.com. Also, if you want to get in touch with me, at Garland Nixon on Twitter. Garland Nixon, G-A-R-L-A-N-D, and Nixon, common spelling, N-I-X-O-N, Garland Nixon on Facebook. And GarlandN at gmail.com is my email address. We got plenty to talk about, so we're going to talk about... the Supreme Court. We're going to talk about Obamacare. What I used to think of as judges, and now I think of them as politicians in robes, which seems fairly obvious.
I've been thinking that since 2000. They threw out our election of Albert Gore as president of the United States and installed their guy, George Bush.
So, what are your first thoughts? In case you don't know what's going on, some plaintiffs, it's King versus Burwell, and some people have made it to the Supreme Court, amazingly, have gotten to the Supreme Court with the argument that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, in case you didn't understand it a little bit, basically what happens, and for those who don't know, Obamacare is not government health care. Obamacare is just basically a portal to get health care.
It's subsidies so you can get health care cheaper.
Yeah, subsidies and basically websites or whatever you want so you can get health care through the insurers.
Right, so if people tell you they hate Obamacare, what they're saying is they don't want to give subsidies to people to get them health insurance. They want people to not be able to afford health insurance and die.
And the government...
Just so we're clear here, if you don't support the Affordable Care Act, what you're saying is you need more dead poor people because they shouldn't get subsidies to buy health care.
Yeah, and the thing about it is this. There's a fraudulent argument about government health care. The government is not providing the health care.
We wish it did.
You're right. They're only connecting people to insurers in the market like Aetna or Blue Cross or whoever the case may be. So,
and providing subsidies for middle-class people
That brings us back to the case before the Supreme Court. So within the statute, the Obamacare, the ACA, there was a writing that said... The Affordable Care Act. There was basically writing that said the subsidies were available to people who
earn less than a certain amount of money.
Through a state exchange.
Yeah, what it said is that basically the states can set up exchanges because they wanted to give states the right to do that, and 13 states have done that, including California, including the District of Columbia, by the way.
Yep.
Interestingly, I think we'll get to this, but they're talking about the typo established by the state. You'd have to abolish it in the District of Columbia because the District of Columbia is not a state. If you want to take the District of Columbia, but that's, of course, silly. We'll get to that.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's a very good point. According to their argument, I wonder if the government is making that argument.
They should say D.C. So here's the deal. Just so the statute was set up, it's 2,000-page statute. It's very, very detailed on a whole number of things, like you can't discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions, and children under 26 are covered in their parents' policy, and you know employers have to provide a certain amount, and they can't make so much profit. There's a whole bunch in this law. But basically, the law allowed states to set up exchanges if they wanted, and if they didn't want, there'd be a default federal exchange. And that part is throughout the bill, and it's in some...
And, of course, most of the Republican governors said we're not going to set up an exchange in our state, so people in their states who wanted it could just go to the federal exchange,
that's exactly right.
And they could get health care.
Right, yeah, there's a little bit. These things are always so complicated, which they do on purpose so that you, you can't understand them. But basically, if you are under the poverty line, then you should get it under the statute. But the Republican governors aren't allowing that. And in my home state of Virginia, basically working class and middle class people can get it, but poor people can't.
Right.
And if that seems counterintuitive, you're right, it is. But Virginia would rather let thousands of Virginians die than give them free health care that Virginia doesn't have to pay for.
Right.
And if you want to know why that is, you'll have to talk to the Republicans who control the Virginia legislature.
Right. So now these people, the plaintiffs, are arguing that because the statute says you can get subsidies if you get health care through exchanges established by the state, that the term state is meant literally, you know, the 50 states, which as we
which,
just...
by the way, if it's meant literally, it's singular. It only applies to
one
state.
It doesn't say... that's a good point.
Right, so by the state. If you're going to apply this thing literally, it can only apply to one state, one unknown and unnamed state. Now, obviously, take in context in a 2,000-page statute that mentions states and federal exchanges.
But according to what they're saying...
Throughout, obviously, what happened is, and I used to work in Congress, so many of you know, I was legislative counsel, Congressman Barney Frank. I've drafted many, many laws. And law drafting is a group effort. If you have a 2- or 3- or 5-page bill, that might be by one member of Congress. But you got one of these things, 2,000 pages, I guarantee you the Affordable Care Act was written by hundreds of authors.
And then amended many times over as because of lobbying
Many politicians, much staff within a politician's office. And when you're dealing with a 2,000-page bill, it is often hard to make sure all the... One of the things you're supposed to do, in fact, one of the things that the congressional... there's the congressional drafting offices, basically, who are nonpartisan and designed to help members of Congress, you know, write good laws. It's kind of their job to not do typos. And it's not an easy job because in looking through a 2,000-page bill where line, you know, page 103 refers to page 1412, which also refers to section of, you know, and then you change the law. And you got to remember, you got to change all the sections it refers to. Well, what happened was, this was probably, we don't know exactly where this provision comes from, but who wrote it, but one person wrote it down and they weren't thinking about the federal exchanges when they wrote it down, and they just didn't correct this portion to conform to everything else. Basically, it's a typo. It's kind of like a Garland, if they're writing a book about the life and times of Garland Nixon, and in 200 pages in the book, they call you Garland without an E.
Right.
But one place, somebody who writes,
puts an E
at the end of your name, and then insists that one must be right, and the other 200 were wrong.
Yeah, the book has nothing to do with Garland Nixon, because
it's about this other guy, Garland E. Nixon. Yeah. That must be what it's about. It's an argument.
And add this. And they go to the author, and the author says, "No, I meant Garland when I wrote it." No, you didn't.
No, you meant Garland E.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't care what you meant.
Yeah, Garland E, who's this Mexican...
drug lord or something.
Maybe so. So again, it's the kind of argument that if you made it to a teacher or your mom or any other place. I mean, you see a typo, you know it when you see it.
Right.
Right? You don't assume the person meant to write H-T-E. You assume they meant to write the, T-H-E.
Right.
Because H-T-E is not a word.
Right.
You know, so your typos are pretty obvious for most of us. But it's an argument that's so weak, in fact, that when this act came before the Supreme Court before, none of the judges mentioned it. The judges, in fact, including the conservative judges, Scalia, Alito, all wrote their state or federal exchanges. Everyone understood that's how the law is supposed to work. But now some creative conservative lawyer went through, found this typo, and is insisting that the typo is right and the other 1,900 pages of the law are wrong.
Right.
And it's the kind of thing that really should be so frivolous that the guy's sanctioned for making
absolutely. Rule 11 sanctions that I call for.
But it's instead going he's at before the United States Supreme Court.
There's a number of reasons why this is absurd, not the least of me. Let me throw this out. We can get into a number of reasons, but let me start with this. To say that a statute, any law has a word in it, and you have to literally go by the word is ridiculous, and let me tell you why. Congress could write a law, and they could say, no person is allowed to have a dog in their home. And then under the definitions of dog, they could say, dog means cat. Mm-hmm. Under the definitions, they could say dog, for the purpose of this law, means feline species of the blah, blah, blah.
Let me just give you something that's...
Let me finish. Okay. So what would that mean? That would mean that really the term dog, that when you read that law, it would mean nobody could have a cat in their home, because for the purpose of this law, they have changed the meaning of dog to cat. Legally, they can perfectly do that. You can't argue.
Let me give some examples.
Can't argue that you have to go literally by the words when the fact of the matter is that a legislative body can change the meaning of any word they want to mean anything they want.
They certainly can. Let me give you two examples of where this has happened. Which are a little easier to understand than, because Congress probably aren't likely to call dogs cats.
Right.
Okay. One very.
But they could.
They could. Well, one very clear example, and it happens all the time, and it has to do with the District of Columbia. Congress writes, state, when used in this statute, shall refer to the District of Columbia. Now, District of Columbia is not a state, but if it says Part A, when a state is used in this statute, it should include any of the 50 states and also the District of Columbia.
Right.
And then it goes on to say, no state shall allow cocaine use,
right.
Whatever. That includes District of Columbia. How do we know? Because it says so in A. Well, what if you say, well, District of Columbia is not a state, and it isn't, and no one could deny it's not. It doesn't matter. They define the word state to include the District of Columbia. One more example. When Republicans banned internet gambling, which I hate because I'm a poker player and I like to
spend
$5 and play online poker. But they banned it. They banned it except for horse racing, because Mitch McConnell, state of Kentucky, where they have a whole long tradition of horse racing. So basically, they said gambling is not gambling when it's betting on horses. You can't bet on dogs. You can't bet on sports teams. You can't bet on poker games. You can't bet on roulette or poker. Gambling shall be defined to include placing a wager on anything except
horse racing.
And then they go on and say you can't gamble in America. Da, 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 da. When they say you can't gamble, they don't mean you can't gamble. They mean you can't gamble except for horse racing, because they define gambling not to include horse racing. So that's actually very common.
Yeah.
Statute drafting, and it happens all the time. Less often do they call dogs cats, although they theoretically could. But these are a couple examples of from real life that show that, yeah, Congress often defines words in strange ways, you know, including when they say person can mean corporation, when we all know corporation is not a person.
Right.
So, you know, if Congress drafts.
There's instances where they say individual. They use individual as a corporation. So let's talk about one of the what's already in law, what's already been decided by the Supreme Court. This is really easy. I'm going to read one sentence to you. But this particular case is as I understand it, the most cited case in the courts each year, cited thousands of times each year. And having worked for the Department of Natural Resources, who made numerous in Maryland, who made God knows thousands of regulations, which meant a lot of them were ambiguous, amorphous, and basically what was always found by the court is the Department of Natural Resources' intent is to protect, you know, rockfish, deer, whatever it is, and you interpret their regulations based on their goal, based on what they're trying to do. You can't say they left out a word, therefore they mean that you can shoot 99 deer. Okay, but so let me read this. It's Chevron USA versus Incorporated versus Natural Resources Defense Council. Why doesn't that sound like a strange, sound odd? But at any rate, let me just read one sentence from the Supreme Court in that case. It says, an agency to engage in informed rulemaking, listen to this, must consider varying interpretations and the wisdom of its policy on a continuous basis. It also goes on to say there was a statute there that it says called the bubble concept. But anyway, it goes on to say, talking about this, the court says they consider this a policy argument when you're talking about does this word mean that or what, or was that their intent? What was the intent of them is a policy argument. The court says policy arguments concerning the bubble concept, which was the issue, should be addressed to legislators or administrators, not to judges. They have found repeatedly that basically when someone argues about the writing, the minutia within administrative writing within a statute or within a regulation, and the state says, no, that's not what we meant, as according to our mission, we interpret it this way, that you show deference to the the governing body and their intention.
Garland, let's back up a bit because I feel we may be losing some people with the intricacies of the law.
Looks like one of them is Bill Witherspoon.
When we come back, I want to describe why agencies exist in the first place because I think it gives a real understanding of where we are with this law. All right, so let's take a break.
WPFW, we'll be right back with
Mark
FM.
Levine. We'll be right back with News Views and Garland Nixon right after this.
The WPFW Community Advisory Board is holding its monthly board meeting at 6:30 p.m. on Monday, November 17th at the William O. Lockridge Library near the Anacostia Metro stop. The meeting is open to the public and all are welcome to attend. Please join if you have concerns related to the station's programming goals, services, or policy decisions. You can also email your concerns to cab.wpfw@mail.com.
So we're back. This is News Views. I am Mark Levine.
And I'm Garland Nixon. And Mark is going to explain us why agencies are formed in the first place.
I think it's important for people to understand because you can get lost in the weeds on this. So for the first 100 years or so of American history, there were no federal agencies.
Right.
1700s, 1800s, basically, the states had a lot more power at that time. And the federal government, basically, there was the president and his cabinet. And they did what they could. And, you know, it wasn't easy. So in around the 20th century, the turn of the century, starting with the Republican, Teddy Roosevelt, continuing into Democrat, Franklin Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, people started to understand that in a complex nation that spans a continent, it's hard for the president and his cabinet to make all those decisions. That's a lot of work for one person or even for 20 or 30 people. So the administrative state was set up. One of the earliest agencies, in fact, was the Food and Drug Administration, which dates back to Teddy Roosevelt, because someone had to keep the food clean. And they said, you know, Congress, it may not be competent to give all the details on how you keep food clean. You know, Congress may not know that you can have arsenic in one part per billion, you know, and streptococcus in one part per million or whatever it is, that what's safe and what's not safe. We should let experts, the people who run the agency, make these determinations. Congress could say our water should be clean. Okay, that's the standard. Mm-hmm. But it's up to the agency to determine what does clean mean? How clean should it be? You know, water can't be perfectly clean. So, you know, what makes it clean? What doesn't harm you? And the agency's opinion can change over time.
As
science changes over time, we understand that, okay, this actually, you know, people used to think tomatoes were poisonous. Tomatoes are not poisonous at all. But now we learned that plastics are poisonous if you ingest them, and we got to keep plastics out of our water. So whatever it is, it changes over time. Well, the idea of the agency state is that Congress shouldn't have to pass a new law every year as we understand what keeps water clean,
right,
or what keeps the air clean, or you know, if it regulates,
or a new bacteria is discovered or something, the slightest little thing.
Or any agency provision, you know, if it has to do with you know, regulating traffic laws or regulating strip mining, whatever it is. Congress lays out these general concerns for the agency, and then the agency is supposed to interpret Congress's language, understanding the language, but also using their own opinion. They're supposed to be experts and basically tweak it over time. So that and it's actually a great idea because for Congress to be in the minutia of, you know, I mean, when you think about what agencies do, I mean, they regulate baby food,
right?
They regulate toys to make sure they don't fit in.
They don't have lead paint in them.
You know, if Congress had to write down in a statute every last regulation on every product that's made in the country, they'd get even less done than they do now.
And change them every time there's a change
in
a product.
Exactly, and every time. So a manufacturer makes a new product. It's a new kind of baby seat. Is it safe for a car? Would you want to have congressional hearings on every time a new person puts out a baby seat? This one's safe? No, we have an agency, and the agency looks, and they run tests, and they decide, you know what? That's safe for the baby, and that's not safe for the baby. And that's why we allow deference to these agencies to decide these questions. And when it comes to an ambiguity in the statute, which is what we're talking about,
right,
in the Obamacare case, the IRS is the agency that is designated to interpret ambiguities. And they said, we don't see any ambiguity here. They're state and federal exchanges.
Right.
And the whole point is that if Congress doesn't like that interpretation, they do have an out.
Right.
They can pass a law.
Yep.
Both houses pass it, signed by the president. It becomes law. And they can overturn an agency interpretation they don't like. another way that it can happen is if you change the president. Well, yeah. The president appoints a new head of the EPA.
And they change the interpretation.
And they change the interpretation. That happens all the time. What doesn't happen, what's not supposed to happen, what the case you read, Garland, says is not supposed to happen, is you're not supposed to have a court change the interpretation of a statute. Because Congress writes the law, and the people who interpret the law are in the case of a law that's run by an agency, are these agencies. Now, it's true that courts interpret laws when there aren't agencies there, then the courts have to interpret it. But in this case, there is an agency. They've interpreted the law. It should not even be before the court.
As they found, the Supreme Court found, they consider it a policy argument. It is a policy argument. How are they going to interpret something? How are they going to, which ultimately says, how are they going to enforce it or how are they going to administer it? The Supreme Court found that policy arguments, in their exact words, should be addressed to legislators or administrators, not the judges. As Mark said, the Congress, if the Republicans don't like what's in the law or unhappy with the interpretation, or if Congress or the people that wrote it or the president or whoever, they can easily go in and pass something to change it.
It's not easily.
I don't mean easily.
It's not easy to pass a law. One of the reasons we give this deference to the agencies is precisely because it's not easy to pass a law. The idea is Congress sets the parameters and says the agency, you know, you can decide everything about baby food, whether it's safe or not. But we're not going to regulate adult food because we think adults should figure it out for themselves. Whatever.
Now, here's a perfect example, Mark, because when I said easily pass a law, what I meant was that the process is there.
Well, the process
I didn't mean literally that it was easy.
It's not easy.
I meant that there was a process,
right.
A readily available,
sure.
Easily articulated.
Well, you can elect a new president.
That's right.
And then all the agencies change.
You can just say, how do they pass the law? They do this. It's not like there's no way for them to fix it.
That's exactly right. But I want to understand people why we have
it. But it doesn't have to be fixed.
Republicans are always trying to abolish the government. And I want people to understand that these agencies, who are often bureaucrats, many of you listening to my voice, work for these agencies.
Yeah.
You understand this in D.C., in Maryland, in Northern Virginia. They don't that all of you work very hard. And the vast majority of people who work in agencies are not working there because they're Democrats or Republicans. They're working there because they simply want to do the right thing. If they work for the EPA, they want to protect the environment. You know, if they work for the National Labor Relations Board, they want to be fair to people who are laborers. If they, you know, work for the FCC, they want to regulate communications in a way that's fair for everybody, based on the parameters Congress sets. Now, Congress can set very detailed parameters if they want. But they don't have to, and I'm glad we have agencies out there. Otherwise, can you imagine every time there's a typo, people would have to go back and pass a new law, and, Congress has a hard time
getting anything
done
as
it is.
They'll be going through every law book in America. Let me throw this out, because there's another issue, and at 5:30, I'll give out the number, we'll take calls, just before 5:30.
6:30.
6:30. Yeah, good thing so somebody here knows, you know, that it's Eastern time.
Does anybody know what time
it
is?
Does anybody really care?
That's where I was
going. I had to say that. But here's the other part, and that is because this is a very this is a foundational issue in law. This is, you know, the term that is often used, the intent of the law, the spirit of the law, right? It's always used in the courts. So what happens if this goes through? Well, in case
if the Supreme Court overturns?
Yeah. Let me throw some unintended consequences. A while back, all these Tea Party groups who are 501c4s, that means that they are nonprofit groups and that they don't have to disclose their donors. They don't have to say where this dark money is coming from. People can give them all kind of money and they don't. Okay. And everybody knows that they're doing, doing politics.
But that's not
Let me read you what the law says. The law says civic leagues or organizations not organized for profit but operated exclusively for the promotion of social welfare.
Right.
Now, in 1959, the IRS interpreted exclusively to mean primarily. And they decided
I would argue that goes outside the statute.
Right.
Because I said Congress can set the parameters. And they can say, you know, IRS, you decide how much of it's dedicated to social welfare. For example, if Congress had said primarily, then I think IRS would have some leeway to determine what's primarily and what's not. But because Congress said exclusively, I would argue that actually went outside the parameters.
Right. If it was the other way, they could have the IRS could have pushed it and said, well, exclusively primarily, we can say it's 90%. You really couldn't argue that they wanted.
Right.
But it says exclusively. Now, these 501c3s that claim that the Obama IRS was going after them. What's happened is this. Congress, I mean, the IRS interpreted exclusively to mean primarily. So what they're saying to these 501c4, these nonprofit organizations, at least 51% of their resources must be for the promotion of social welfare. And the other 49% can be used for politics. 49% can be used for politics. Well, the fact of the matter is they're using 100% for it, but that's beside the point.
Well, but the point is that actually, I think, would go so far that it is a breach, and I'd love to see a lawsuit.
The point is, there already is, and Chris Van Hollen filed it. But here's the issue. If the court finds that you have to go by the literal meaning of the word and that an agency cannot interpret it as in...
Then you got to tax all those Tea Party
groups. Then it says, this law says civic leagues, organizations not organized for profit but operated exclusively for the promotional work. If they find that there is no way that you can argue that IRS can interpret exclusively to mean... primarily, that argument is over.
You know what the flaw in your logic is, what? Garland? You used logic.
The Supreme Court.
No. You used logic. You're presuming that if 2 + 2 = 4, that 2 + 2 = 4. In this case, the Supreme Court, let's recall, in Bush v. Gore, said, we will not set a time limit for democracy. In the same opinion where they set a time limit, December 12, 2000, they said, we will let all the people vote. At the same time, they threw out 75,000 votes.
Right.
They said that nothing's more important than the people decide who our president is when they decide who our president was.
Right.
They could decide that we will not respect an agency that upholds Obamacare, but we will respect an agency that says Tea Parties don't have to pay taxes. The general principle is this. The law is whatever we say it is. Go F yourself and get and don't question it. We have a right to be illogical.
They would
Now it's not based on law.
No.
And it's not based on logic, and it would certainly be unethical. But we have seen several members of the Supreme Court not give a damn about law, logic, ethics, or jurisprudence, and are more than willing to expressly contradict themselves when it helps their cause.
When it supports...
And after Bush v. Gore, when they said, we won't set a time limit for democracy, and they set a time limit on democracy, you can't be surprised when people like Anthony Scalia claim they believe in the text of the law, but they only believe in the text of the law when it happens to support right-wing causes. When it doesn't support right-wing causes, then they believe in interpretation, and they believe in a very fluid sense. And that's the difference between justices and judges who actually apply the law and rank hypocrites who are sitting up there basically doing whatever their party says and not giving a damn about the constitution or the law. And yes, I include Justice Scalia in that camp.
Yeah, right. They're politicians in robes is what they are.
Exactly.
And it's something I always say.
But I don't know that they all are. And that's why I think at the end of the day, Chief Justice Roberts, and I hope I'm right, and I could be wrong, I think Chief Justice Roberts will look back from the abyss. I think he does have some respect for the law, unlike Antonin Scalia, who has no respect for the Constitution. I think Chief Justice Roberts has some, and I think he will recognize that if he sets this precedent, then there is no more law. And law entirely becomes what nine people and judges in robes say it is, because he would be expressly going against centuries of history and, as you point out, would be inconsistent with a whole other body of law, which says, for example, the Tea Party people should pay taxes.
And here's the thing about it, Mark.
I think he's going to turn back from the abyss.
If he
does predict
this,
that, I hope I'm right. I could be wrong, but I predict in a 5-4 decision, it will be upheld again.
Then let me ask you this. Based on the fact that this is part of the bedrock of the American legal...
It's such a stupid argument.
I mean,
it's just a really... There are times when the law really is ambiguous.
Right.
That's why I said, Mark.
Think about this.
We do a peace treaty with the Soviet Union. Does it include Russia now or not? You can make an argument either
way. Well, here's the thing about it. Because
There's no argument. There's no logical argument to the other side.
And here's the thing I'm saying. Because this is part of kind of the bedrock of the American legal system, because there's so many, decided, in the event that they would make this decision contrary to 200 years of legal findings, can you imagine the number of lawsuits that would suddenly appear from Chevron, from the frackers, from all of these? Because I worked for the Department of Natural Resources in Maryland, there's a 4-inch book of regulations in every state. So you see, when it comes to wildlife,
They'd probably do what they did with Bush v. Gore. They'd say, don't cite this opinion.
Right.
It's not precedent. We don't know what we're doing. We just want to get our way.
Because when it comes to wildlife, when it comes to conservation, that stuff is all regulation. There's regulations, and there's books and books and books of regulations for every animal, every trees, and a lot of them, most of them are fairly ambiguous. with the intent of protecting the species. If that's the case, can you imagine how many lawsuits will be filed by opportunistic people saying, now we can make some real money because the government can't stop us from whatever, you know, throwing nets in the bay. Well, we got to take a quick break. Bill is giving us the break sign. Let me give you the number, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. We got Tyrone and Lisa. We'll get to you on the line. Garland Nixon and Mark Levine, WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon, Mark Levine here, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C.
Before we get to our callers, you talked about the legal impact.
And then we're going to start to Tyrone and give Mark about a minute and a half.
Okay. I probably don't even need that long. I want to talk not just about the legal impact, but the practical impact. In 37 states in the United States, including those of you who live in Virginia, all right, in three-quarters of the states, they have no state exchange. You have one in Maryland. You have one in D.C., although D.C. may be thrown out based on this statute. I don't know about D.C.
It has to be. It's not a state.
It's not a state.
If you go by the literal interpretation, law, there is no, right. there can never
so
be
so
a state exchange in D.C.
So what this means, for all of you who live in Virginia, for all of you who live in D.C., your subsidies for health insurance are going to vanish, and your health insurance will largely vanish. Your pre-existing conditions, all of you who now have health care will lose it in an instant. Thousands. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans.
I already have the number.
Maybe millions.
4.6 million people.
Thank you. There's your number.
Will, they won't, it's not they'll lose health care, but they'll lose their subsidies. So instead of paying $70 a month, they'll pay $470, and they'll basically effectively lose it.
So if you're living month to month, if you're barely paying for your rent, if your health care bill is just enough, you may have to decide, as you used to prior to the Affordable Care Act, I can either afford health care or rent. I'll pay my rent, and if you get sick, you will die. Thousands of Americans.
Nah, 4.6 million.
Well, 4.6 million will lose health insurance. Thousands of Americans will unnecessarily die. Dead.
Hey, quote, Mark, one quick question.
When we talk about 3,000 Americans killed on September 11th, thousands of Americans will die if the Republicans get this before the Supreme Court, because they will lose their health care coverage, and the emergency rooms just aren't can't take care of all of our health care.
The states that didn't establish healthcare exchanges where all of the people
they're
are
almost all red
who
states.
Will lose their healthcare are where?
They're almost all so red the, states the, and so, purple states.
So they'll say, hooray, we did away with Obamacare. Wait a minute.
Well, Republicans aren't worried because they're mostly poor and middle-class people, and they either don't vote or the Republicans don't want them to vote, and after all, they don't give them money, the Koch brothers fund.
Right.
They've got plenty of nice healthcare. It's all the people that don't matter, according to Republicans. The great unwashed, they might call them.
And think about this. In those states, it's going to be middle-class people because the poor people couldn't get it because of Medicaid expansion.
Right.
So
poor,
it's going to be middle-class, working poor and working-class people, 4.6 million, mostly in the red state, almost exclusive.
If you are
wait a minute,
under $100,000,
exclusively in red states. It has to be a red state.
Depending on your income, under $50,000. But basically, it's the median person. You're going to lose your health care.
If you're in a red state.
And you know what? I don't think most people realize that. And at that point, I sure hope all of you, if it does happen, get together and march on Washington and demand health care.
If you're in a red state, you lose your subsidies. If you're in a blue state, you don't. Okay, let's start with Tyrone.
I fear for my Virginians. It will very much affect the state of Virginia. It won't affect Maryland. You'll be okay in Maryland. It may very well knock out D.C. because we talked about it.
According to the laws, they're not a state.
So D.C.'s in trouble and Virginia's in big trouble.
Tyrone, you're on the air.
How are you?
Fantastic.
Hi, Tyrone.
What can I do for you? What's your knowledge that you're going to bless us with tonight?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about these GMOs and
GMOs. What
genetically modified?
organisms or whatever they are.
Well, but, you know, I'd love to talk about genetically modified organisms, but here's the problem. If we stray away from our from whatever our point is on any given night, next thing you know, it'll be Building 7. Always, we'll be talking about other things. It's always building. So, I would prefer.
Talk about the Obamacare Supreme Court. If you got a comment on that, please give it to us.
We'd love to hear it.
Well, first of all, I support the president's health care system. And I think it would just simply be abominable to doing it, to tamper with it in such a way where it is even done away with, or it doesn't cover the people who really, truly, badly need it. And I thank you all for taking my call, and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Tyrone, for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it would be phenomenal. And a statement I made to Mark in the break, and that is, what Judge Roberts would do if he did this would be turn his, as the Chief Justice, he would turn his Supreme Court into a kangaroo court, because they would be they would turn established law upside down.
There'd be millions of laws we don't know what they mean anymore.
And what they would be forced to do would be make findings contradictory to that finding, because they couldn't continue to go to support that, because our entire legal system and regulatory system would fall apart.
If they tried to apply the law logically, now they could just try to apply it with whatever Republicans want they get, no matter what the law is. That would be another system. Someone call that dictatorship.
He would turn his Supreme Court into a kangaroo court. His legacy
It would end the rule of law.
Yes. Well, I always say this. Conservatives don't believe in the rule of law.
No,
they believe in arbitrary application of the law.
Exactly.
The left tends to say rule of law, even if I don't like it, that's the rules. Conservatives can tend to say it only applies the way I like it.
Yeah, the law only is what I say it is. I don't care what it actually is.
Really. And it changes tomorrow if I need to. Who's that? Lisa. Lisa, welcome to WPFW. You're on the air.
Welcome, Lisa.
Is there something that the poor in Virginia and those states that do not give the poor medical services, is there any way they can sue that state?
No,
because
unfortunately.
Because of discrimination, because if they are giving it to one group and denying another group, isn't that discrimination?
That's a great point. I mean, you should have equal protection under the law. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court has held that Virginia, and Virginia is a good example, which in Virginia, so they decided not to take all the money given by the federal government to give Virginians health care. They said, we don't want it. Virginians don't need health care. Poor middle-class Virginians don't need any help. We'll give it all to the people of Maryland, which may, you know, you folks
in
Maryland.
But they'll pay for it. But the people in Maryland, they're paying for it.
Right. Everyone will pay for it, but it'll only go to the blue states. Now, you would think that's pretty unfair to the people of Virginia, and we Democrats in Virginia argued exactly that. But the state legislature of Virginia has said that they're not going to apply it. It would be an interesting lawsuit, but I don't think it would prevail, because the Supreme Court has said, I think wrongly, that states can decide whether or not to opt in to this coverage or not. I don't think that's logical either. When I read the statute, it doesn't read that way at all. But it was a 5-4 vote, and what can I say?
Right.
Our whole point today is that the Supreme Court, maybe the Supreme Court, but that doesn't mean they're always right on the law.
And keep in mind, when you say use this word, the word discrimination, the term discrimination in itself fools a lot of people. It's not illegal to discriminate. There's a lot of things we discriminate about. What is illegal is discrimination that is expressed in law. For instance, if somewhere in the law it says you can't discriminate against a person because of age or gender or race or whatever, then a person can take legal action if they discriminate. But just discrimination in itself as a broad term, if somebody says, well, I was discriminated against, what you have to prove is that there was something illegal about the discrimination.
If you're under 18, you can't vote. That's discrimination.
It is.
And it's perfectly legal. The standard is the 14th Amendment says that no state shall deny to its citizens the equal protection under the law. And there's been thousands and thousands of cases saying what that means. But I like Lisa's point. I think that someone in Virginia should be able to sue for equal protection. It makes perfect sense to me, but the Supreme Court has sort of already held that they
can't. And here's the other thing that poor people can do in those states that I would say, vote.
Yeah, because they didn't vote. They didn't. We had the lowest turnout in 2014 since World War II. Since basically all the people were serving.
We're chasing the Germans or somewhere.
And they couldn't vote then since 1942.
In the Pacific Islands or whatever. Okay, next we got Tesfa. Tesfa, welcome to WPFW. You're on the air.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening.
Tesfa.
Democracy exists because of tolerance. Tolerance of differences of ideas, tolerance of differences of interests. If one group only pushes its own and exclusively its own interests by any means and by all means, there can be no democracy. Democracy works because there is some participants in the democracy believe there is something in common, like kindness, like being human, respect for each other, and some belief that we all share. But when we push it to the extreme, only push our own particular interest and want to impose it by any means and by all means, there can be no democracy.
Couldn't agree more, Tesfa.
That is no more democracy. It's totalitarian.
Yeah, right. It is exactly that. It is not governance. See, what we're talking about here is the difference between governing and ruling. Governing says that there are already avenues to address this, that Congress can do this. Congress and the president, there are already legal ways. If there's something written in the law or not written in the law, there's always a manner for them to do it. That's governing. However, ruling says, even though there is, our ideology and our party doesn't like it, and we have a method to change it, and we're going to change it outside of the constitutional process that is already provided. Who do we have next? David?
Hi, David. Welcome to WPFW.
You're on the air, David. David, you're kind of broken up. I hope you don't have your radio on.
I'm still here.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Are you being a lawyer?
I'm a lawyer. Mark is a lawyer, yes.
Mark,
that's me.
You're a lawyer.
Yes.
I've been asking people on PFW this for a month now. Does the mayor, but trying to stick with what I was listening to you say, does the mayor have the power to override or write a quick claim deed on the property and get rid of it?
Well, I got to tell you, unfortunately, as I said before to one of our other guys, one of our other callers, people have a lot of questions, and you know, this is, we don't want to turn this into the legal hotline where people call, you know, 1-800 get a lawyer, and you know, we sit there and we're telling people, you know, oh yeah, you can do this or you can do that,
I'm not a DC lawyer,
and then Mark gets sued for practicing
yeah,
and you know with but, not having passed
yeah,
the bar in DC.
Exactly, I'm not a DC lawyer, so
no.
We got to stick to this particular topic. So,
yeah.
Sorry, David.
Well, we'll have Mark will be sanctioned under Rule 11 right here on the air.
That would be bad. Let's go to Ken. Ken, welcome to News Views with Garland and Mark.
And we got some room. We got a couple of open lines, 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893.
Ken, are you there?
Do we have Ken?
No, he dropped.
Ken dropped. Oh, so we got some open lines. All right.
We got Mary.
Mary!
Hello, Mary.
Hey,
you're on the air.
How's everybody doing?
Wonderful.
I have a question. Why are these bat crap human beings doing this?
Well, I mean, which ones are you talking about?
Going to court for a typo.
Well, the conservative legal foundations that are bringing this to the Supreme Court do not like the Affordable Care Act. They do not want poor middle-class people to get health care because they consider that a redistribution of wealth, and they think poor people should be poor and shouldn't get health care. They don't deserve health care. They're too poor for it.
That sounds racist.
They think health – well, a lot of it is. But it's also against poor whites, too. They basically
–
I think health care is a human right. They do not. In fact, I've had Republicans I've argued tell me health care is a privilege,
right,
not a right.
Well,
I don't think health care.
I don't think life is a privilege.
I don't think so. To me,
once you're born.
What can we do as people? Because we've been talking a long time about this. I'm ready for action. You know how I am. It's like it's time to go down to the Capitol and make the Capitol look different.
Well, Mary, I actually think it would be useful to have protests in front of the Supreme Court. on a regular basis saying, don't take away our health care.
Exactly.
I think it'd be good to have that visual. I think it'd be good to have Time Magazine or CNN or whomever see, you know, don't take away our health care.
Mark, will you lead us?
I'll do it. If you'll help me organize it, Mary, I'll be there. Well, I'm sure Colin will too.
It's time for.
But we got to get a good crowd.
It's time for leadership.
If we show up with 10 people, then it'll be worse than if we do nothing
at all.
That's
not enough. We need 10,000 people.
Well, exactly. We need hundreds and hundreds at least, and thousands would be great.
And the only thing that I can do is keep talking to the people that I see every day.
Well, yes. Mary, if you want to talk to me off air, my Facebook is Mark Levine, M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E, on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, my website, MarkLevineTalk.com. I'd be more than happy to try and organize something. We need to get a lot of people out there.
Yes.
Because Chief Justice Roberts...
It's time to take over. It's time for the people to take over.
Here's the thing. He's a right-winger, and he's a conservative, but he does seem to pull back from the abyss when he realizes that he's going to make a very, very controversial decision, and I think he's persuadable.
You know something, I believe
we need to shut something down. That will send a message to the Supreme Court that the people do have power. Thanks, guys. I'm going to go off in this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
One of the things I also think here from another perspective is this. You know, you've got the top 1%, the ruling elite, shall we say, those corporate people that the Mitt Romneys and up, the Koch brothers, these people. There's a system that we're kind of living under, an economic and legal system, and they're doing pretty darn well under it. And they don't like things to shock the system where they don't know what will happen. This could be a drastic shock because I was reading a report the other day that went through all of these things, such as generic drugs, how that would change. There are companies that could be facing millions, if not billions of dollars in changes in profit. There are companies who will have doors open where people can come in and sneak in and take. So it would be so unpredictable that I think what I would consider I don't want to turn into conspiracy theorists here, but what I think are very, very those super wealthy, international, corporate, powerful people would be afraid, and this is who Roberts represents first and foremost, in my opinion, they would be afraid of the unintended consequences, so much so that they wouldn't do this for the wing of their party.
Senator Ted Cruz, who of Texas, who's probably the craziest right winger we've got in the Senate.
I don't even think he's the craziest one from Texas. You ever heard of Louie Gohmert?
but he's not a senator. I said in the Senate.
Oh, okay, in the Senate.
He was on Right Wing Radio. I think it was the Hannity Show. Back a couple years ago when they were talking about the Affordable Care Act. Because Mary asked, why are they against
it? Oh, yes, I know where you're going.
He said something very interesting. He said, you know, Social Security, we opposed it. People got it. They liked it. Medicare, you know, we opposed it. They got it. They liked it. If we don't stop Obamacare now, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the exact... If we don't stop the Affordable... Oh, he didn't say Affordable Care. If we don't stop the Obamacare now... People are going to want it. They're going to like the subsidies. They're going to enjoy free health care. Poor people will get health care.
Imagine that.
It'll be redistribution of wealth because poor people will have health care, and to some extent, the wealthy have to pay for it, and they will not want to give it up. We have to stop it before they get it. And I thought it was very, you know, he's talking to right-wingers. I guess he didn't think others would listen in. But basically, he makes the point that people like health care. And, you know, if a mother has a 9-year-old child that's dying of leukemia, she wants her child to live, even if she's poor. Even poor women actually want their children to live. I know this surprises some in the right wing. And so because of that, they're not going to want to give it up. And so we have to basically drown this baby, Obamacare, in the crib before it grows up to strangle it, I guess I should say.
You know what? Here's
before it grows up, because you know what? Even Republicans today, Garland, don't want to give up Social Security.
Here's the thing
about Republicans don't want to give up Medicare. And if the Affordable Care Act is allowed to exist for 5 or 10 years, even Republicans will support it as well.
Think about this too. If let's say the judge makes this rule, so that means that in the red states, about 4.5 million people will pretty much lose that, won't be getting subsidies unless the state comes up with an exchange in a red state. So now you're going to have a governor in a red state,
and
you're
going to
have hundreds of thousands of people hundreds of thousands of voters, many who are Republicans,
yep,
who didn't have any idea what was going to happen. They were going to be saying, hooray, we defeated Obamacare. And they're going to get a letter that says, you owe another $400 a month. Now, these Republican legislatures and governors in the red states are going to have to make a decision. Are they going to set up an exchange and bail out Obamacare in their states? Or are they going to turn their head and allow hundreds of thousands of people in their states, millions nationwide?
And then, Mary, we won't just march on D.C. We'll march on Richmond. We'll march on Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah. We'll march on state capitals all across the country.
You know, what will happen in Virginia? What will happen in North Carolina? What will happen in even Alabama or wherever?
Tennessee, Indiana.
When the reality hits home and the governors and legislators are getting swamped, right, by phone calls, letters, etc.
You took my health care away.
Wait,
my kids
a minute.
Died. You know what I think we should do if this happens? I think people should take their sick children to their legislator's office and say, I can't afford a doctor. Please, my child's dying. How's that for a good photo op? Here's my child. My child has leukemia.
Right.
I can't afford a doctor. You voted that my child should die. I want you to take care of my child and go to their doorstep,
right,
and follow them with sick children. Follow them with wheelchairs. Follow them all across the country and say, you know what? You've got to heal me because you took my health care away.
They're going to have to
that
say
would be a good protest
to the people in their state.
That'd be a great protest. I'd love to organize that one with you,
yeah,
Mary.
Yep, we are not going to. Can you imagine the pressure on the red states? They'll just simply have to say to the people in their states, they'll have to say to the medical industry in their states, you know, the millions and millions of dollars that started flooding in now from all of these people buying health care, that's gone.
Yeah.
And they'll have to say, you know what the red states are doing? You know what we're doing? We don't have, nobody really has medical coverage because they can't afford it now. We didn't accept Medicaid expansion. Here's what we're doing. We are subsidizing health care for the blue states. We're paying for all the blue states' health care,
right,
and we're not getting any.
God, we got four more calls.
Oh, we
got
to make this quick.
6 minutes. So
okay.
We'll
give you
really,
a minute each. Who's next? Ed, we got to give you 1 minute.
Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, I was listening to you guys. If they find out that they don't have the health care, you know, they're suffering, they're going to hate it, but they will find a way, I promise you, to blame it on liberals like yourself.
You're right, Ed. That's a really good point.
That's what they'll do.
That's exactly what they'll do. And the sad thing is lots and lots of poor white people will believe it.
Yeah. Next, we're going to go to Dean. Dean, we only got about 30 seconds for you. Fire away.
Yeah, I just got a question. Who has the strongest argument for single-payer health care?
Current conservatives. The conservative argument.
What do you mean? Who has the stronger argument? I strongly support. I don't call it single payer because that scares people. I call it Medicare for all. I take a nice happy word rather than a word that people say smacks of socialism. But listen, the Affordable Care Act. I'll be the first to tell you it's good, but not good enough. In 50 countries all over the world, they live longer than we do.
Yep.
They have cheaper health care than we do. They all have single payer. So that's the ultimate solution.
Okay, next we've got Rodney. Rodney, sorry, but we can only give you about a half a minute.
Okay. Five fellas, RG here.
Hey,
RG.
I wanted to ask you especially Mark, what's the effect the Republicans going to have on Medicaid expansion? Could you address that, please?
Well, sure. They're against Medicaid expansion, obviously. It's a state-by-state issue. So, for example, in Virginia, we elected a nice Democratic governor, and he tried really hard, Governor McAuliffe, but the Republican legislature wouldn't budge. So Medicaid expansion depends on the state.
Most of the red ones are.
Yeah, although there are some exceptions. For example, Kentucky has a Democratic governor.
Arkansas.
There are red states that have Medicaid expansion because they happen to have Democratic governors.
Even
John Kasich.
New Jersey
Republican
didn't
governor.
Set up an exchange.
That's right. So it's not quite blue state, red
okay.
state. It depends on your governor's party. If you don't have it in your state, you got to lobby to get it.
Okay, Keith, we can give you 30 seconds.
Go ahead, Keith.
I'm willing, ready, and able to get out there with you, let's take some social action and be picketing around the Supreme Court because people don't realize how important this is. And I'm there's no doubt
thanks a lot, Keith. And I hate
the reason why they let Trump
Thanks a lot, Keith. I hate to cut you off, but we got to get ready to roll. Mark, if somebody wants to get...
Hold on. Keith and Mary, set up a Facebook page. We'll do a protest in front of the Supreme Court, and we'll get a bunch of people
there. If somebody wants to contact you, Mark...
Go to marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Facebook at Mark... go to Mark Levine, or you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E.
I'm at Garland Nixon on Twitter, or Garland Nixon on Facebook, or Garland N... at G, and the N is for Nixon, garlandn at gmail.com is my email address. Feel free to email me. We will have a great time next week. And starting at 6 p.m. next Friday, there'll be another great show. There'll be another great topic. And I'm sure you're going to call in and have a lot of fun. The News Views is the show Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C., your Pacifica affiliate.
Thanks for listening to the just-completed Public Affairs or News Program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.